You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Alyssa Knight can remember the first time she voted. It was a special election. And as she recalls, the issues on the ballot included raising taxes and a school levy for a new gym.
So it was not, I would say, like something that was a very pressing matter. And yet it felt very important to get that ballot and like see my name on this like registered ballot. So it was a big moment.
Alyssa was released from prison last year, and she is able to cast a ballot because of a new state law that gives people convicted of a felony the right to vote immediately after leaving prison. Before this law, Washingtonians in Alyssa's situation couldn't cast a ballot until they completed their community supervision and paid off their court fees. This new law comes from House Bill 1078, which went into effect on the first day of 2022. Alyssa registered to vote as soon as she could this year, and now she's working with the organization Washington Voting Rights Restoration Coalition to try and register other people in her situation to vote. I spoke with Alyssa about what the right to vote means and about the challenges that people who are formerly incarcerated face when registering to vote. She started the conversation by talking about when she became interested in politics.
I would not have described myself as a very politically minded individual when I was younger. You know, I had never voted before I went to prison, and I went to prison at 21. So, you know, I knew about government, but I wasn't informed and I didn't care. And, you know, once I got to prison, I still did not pay much attention to politics up until Obama was running for president. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, this, you know, it became interesting. I guess I felt like someone, not necessarily of my generation, but someone who felt that they reflected me and my views was actually running, and it became very interesting. And from that point forward, I just really started to follow politics. And then the more that I really, I think, learned about not just the political machine, but the prison system and the legal system, I realized like all of these things are actually ran by elections, by governments, by the officials that we elect. These decisions are made about how prisons function. And therefore, all these decisions are made about how my life is structured and what I have access to and what kind of programming is, you know, deemed appropriate for me. And I was realizing all these decisions are made and nobody's actually asking me or any of the other people in the prison what it is that we want. Mm-hmm. And so all these decisions are made and I was not having a say in it. Mm-hmm. And that made me very interested in what would it mean to actually get to be not just a part of the conversation, but to actually be an agent of change in that system.
Mm. And then when you were released, you had the experience of, you know, trying to go online and registering and there not being that opportunity right away. Is it common for folks in your situation to face, you know, confusion and some, you know, issues with finding correct information about voting rights and their ability to vote?
Absolutely. It is a really difficult, hence the reason that the coalition exists. It's a very difficult situation for people who have served a long time. I mean, just, you know, to put it in perspective, think of all the information that you gather from the internet, all of the things that you need digital access and digital literacy to be able to not just access, but understand and to be able to think critically about. And those are all things that people who are inside and especially that have served long sentences, they don't know how to do, you know, and I say they, but I am part of that they, you know, I released from prison and when I went to prison, we had flip phones and dial up internet. So the way that we interact with the internet now, that idea that, you know, you have a burning question, you type it into Google and you get some information, probably a lot of information that you might have to go through and, you know, figure out what is good information, what's bad information. Like that was not a thing that I released from prison understanding or knowing how to access. So being able to just like hop on and register to vote, I would say that I picked up my digital literacy fairly fast, but a lot of people don't. They're afraid of the digital world. They're afraid of technology. They're afraid of having their information out there. So that with the coalition specifically is something that we're kind of trying to really brainstorm about and combat. You know, how do we get people who have a fear of technology to get online, to register to vote, to receive a ballot in the mail, to like understand the importance of this? They're all tied together.
And Alyssa, I imagine that there's shame tied up with that, having missed a lot of technological advancements, not knowing how to Google simple information and sift through the internet to find what you need. There's got to be a lot of complicated feelings about that for somebody who is an adult in the world but isn't comfortable with those things because they've been behind bars.
Yeah, no, it's a constant fear of having to out yourself. If you're having a conversation with someone, I go to the University of Washington, so I'm an older person in a classroom with a lot of young people. I constantly have to explain that I don't know how to use Google Docs and I need an explanation. You know, it's a sharp learning curve, I would say. But it's not just that. You know, it's online banking, it's self-checkout, it's monitoring your credit, it's all of those things. And so, yeah, it's filling out forms online, it's maintaining your medical health online, it's all of those things. And there is a lot of fear and shame around not knowing how to do that. And it's also really frustrating when, you know, you want the agency, especially when you have come to really appreciate what freedom means to you, making decisions for yourself, being able to set appointments for yourself. And then it can be really defeating when you go to do that. And the means of doing it it's a foreign country, it feels like.
I'd like to talk about legal financial obligations, because this law that we're discussing, HB 1078, it allows people leaving prison to vote even if they have these outstanding court fees or fines, which I understand are a major issue for folks when they're trying to start a new life and they're, you know, no longer incarcerated, but they still have this financial stuff hanging over their heads. What is that like? What is that process like for paying back fees and fines?
It's a lifetime thing for most people. So my situation is a little bit different. So I was granted commutation by the governor, which, you know, Washington does not have parole. And the only means of asking for some sort of reprieve on your sentence is to actually ask for clemency or commutation. And a huge part of like success in that venue is to have your LFOs paid off. So my family chipped in and really helped me pay off my LFOs. What that looks like otherwise is you're not responsible for paying it while you're inside. And so these fees don't like come due all of a sudden while you're inside. If you have money sent in, money is taken out of that and sent to your LFOs. If you have a specific class of job, money will be taken from that and sent to your LFOs. But it's a fee that, you know, the court sets, but what they don't tell you is it accrues interest at an astronomical rate. So like for me, I was shared a debt of $14,000 around about. And by the time I like looked at it again to think about, okay, I need to actually think about paying this, it was already up to $21,000. I mean, to think of someone releasing from prison, say like me, you're starting over, you're 40 years old, you have to think about having a job and what you're going to do with your life. And then you also are leaving with a $40,000 debt. Mm. That's huge. It's not something probably someone with no credit would ever be approved for as far as a loan.
Yeah.
And yet you're expected to make like payments on this amount, right? And so I have a lot of friends who have released from prison who are very, very successful, but they maybe have $100,000 in debt just from the LFOs. And so it's not something, and because it continually accrues interest, it's not something they will ever pay off. So to think that's looming over your head for the rest of your life, despite whatever successes you find and however far you're past your prison sentence.
And that meant before HB 1078 was passed, if you didn't have those fines paid off, it was like you would never get your right as a citizen back, right? Yeah, you'd never vote because that was always going to be looming. Yeah. You know, I think that it's really easy for folks to look around and wonder if voting actually matters. I mean, because you know, Washington is a state that votes blue in national elections. Maybe they don't see the meaning of voting in their everyday lives. But for somebody like you, Alyssa, who has had their voting right suspended while you were serving time and now you've gotten it back, talk to me about the importance of voting and what that has meant to you now that you have it back, the right back.
Right. I think like the biggest thing is your local elections are going to be those are the elections that actually are going to make the biggest impact in your life. And that's something that I hope that we can educate people about, not just formerly incarcerated people, but people as a whole. You know, the national election is made into a spectacle, but it's the smaller elections that, you know, put people in power who make decisions about the things that happen in your neighborhood, like how much you pay for rent, if there's a rent cap, where your taxes go. And specifically, if we're thinking about, do we support people who support prison reform? Do we support people who are actually on the ground, like Tara Simmons, who has gotten bills passed, like the voting rights reinstatement, but also like looking at those LFOs, are you able to potentially get all of the interest waived once you've paid your main amount? I mean, these are things, if you elect people who don't care about prison and don't think that our legal system needs reform, then that's where we're going to be stuck.
And just to be clear, Tara Simmons is the representative from Bremerton, state representative who sponsored this bill and is believed to be the first formerly incarcerated member of the Washington State Legislature. Alyssa, you work with Credible Messengers, an organization that's trying to register people who are unhoused and those who are formerly incarcerated to vote. What are the greatest challenges that you run into in this work?
So there are a lot of challenges that come with helping these communities. But like for me, the biggest challenge really is time. I'm a very busy person. Most people who are releasing from prison, they're busy. You're rebuilding a life. You have a lot on your plate, and voting might not be the thing that you're thinking is necessary. But then there's also this whole like trying to figure out what will be most impactful. So where do you reach out to people? How do you get them educated about voting first and then registered to vote? Like, where does our responsibility end? Right? Because civic engagement is not just, I registered to vote and now I get a ballot in the mail. It's knowing who you're voting for. It's learning to do research. It's learning what your political views are if you don't know them already. That idea of being able to not just access information, but also to sift through it, to think critically about it. That goes also for the whole, you know, when we're looking at candidates, does this person potentially support something I believe in? Or are they against something that I believe in? And mm-hmm. understanding that, you know, that can change from election to election. So it's teaching people to actually be engaged enough to pay attention and to do the research.
I can hear people who would oppose this legislation raising their eyebrows and saying, you know, the suspension of the right to vote, that's part of serving your sentence. And when you get out of prison, getting through these fees and getting out of community supervision, that's all part of this justice system running its course. And this legislation was unnecessary because folks who do go through this process, pay all their fees, get out of the supervision of the state, they would have gotten their voting rights back anyway. What's your message to people who feel that way, who think that this bill was unnecessary?
You know, there's a big assumption that the system will run as we constructed it. And it's not right to say, okay, well, the system is meant to do this, and this is how it functions, and someone will funnel through, and, you know, then they'll have all of their rights back, because that's not the case. There ends up being these LFOs that potentially keep you harnessed to the system. There ends up being problems with housing and or lack of support. And that ends up keeping you in the system or having you, again, like repeat offend. It can't just be assumed that the system will function as you expect it to function, because like all systems, there are inherent biases. Some people are treated more fairly. Some people are treated less fairly. The system is not just this objective structure that people come into and leave. It's much more complicated than that. And so legislation at least allows some protections for people. It allows people who, you can't say I release from prison, I start paying taxes, that all of a sudden that's like saying I have taxation without representation.
Alyssa Knight is the co-founder of the Freedom Education Project, Puget Sound, and an activist with the Washington Voting Rights Restoration Coalition and Seattle Clemency Project. She also co-produced a special report on people leaving prison and the digital divide for Unincarcerated, the podcast. Thank you very much for stopping by, Alyssa. We really appreciate the conversation.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And we did get a text call out to listeners asking what voting means to them and how their relationship with voting has changed over time. Here are a few of those responses.
When I was younger and more idealistic, I used to consider voting to be my patriotic duty. Now, in my late 50s, I see how things really work. I hold my nose and vote for the least awful choice. The only time I have ever voted for a president was in Obama's first term. Every other vote has been against the other candidate. It disgusts me, but that's the way things are. And if I don't participate in the stupid game, I don't get to complain. They all end up being about the same anyway with how dysfunctional the Congress is. So one day I may stop participating in this senseless charade altogether.
I have always voted in every election since I turned 18. But now that the country is in a place where one party supports democracy and the other is actively undermining it, it makes voting feel more hollow than ever. A choice between democracy and not democracy is not really a choice at all.
I'm a staunch believer in the power of the vote. I'm a voter services volunteer with the League of Women Voters. We've been targeting young voters in high schools. I'm also working with Seattle Weld to set up voter registration and voter information for women and men recently released who want to be integrated into the community. What better way than to vote?
Voting to me is providing the government direct feedback. Without feedback, there's no chance for genuine improvement. I think the government should consider restoring voting rights for even those presently incarcerated, especially since, by the way the prison industrial complex is going, the poorest and darkest amongst us will soon all be incarcerated, and unjustly for profit at that. Because the U.S. has such a horrible history with wrongly detaining and imprisoning citizens, I think that the least they could do is restore voting rights.
Voting is such a cherished right. I haven't always appreciated it as much as I do now, with democracy hanging in the balance. I think people should be able to vote while they're in prison. They still have a stake in society and should therefore have a say.
I legally immigrated to this country almost 15 years ago. It always was important to vote and influence local policies, taxes, and decisions. It's an honor as a U.S. citizen to have your position heard. Speaking about people who were recently incarcerated, if law permits to vote, let it be. By the book.
You just heard members of the Soundside and KUOW's community engagement teams reading texts from Shelley, James, Angela, Kira, Tar, and Ellen, who were talking about what voting means to them. Thanks for listening to Soundside. Don't forget you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org or on your favorite podcast app.